To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Cool. Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting independent music for over 30 years, and it keeps on living by joining efforts with local music supporters such as Vinyl Records. You can find a selection of Vinyl Records' featured albums on the back cover of Discorder and can support your favorite local bands and artists by purchasing their records. For more information on their vast selection of new, used, and rare music, go to vinylrecords.ca.
It's time to unlock the bathroom door and talk about Crohn's and colitis. They're lifelong diseases. They're on the rise among children under 10, and they involve severe abdominal pain, chronic diarrhea, and for many people, life-altering surgery. They're mired in secrecy and embarrassment, ignorance and fear, which only adds to the pain. It's time to make it stop. Crohn's and colitis. Make it stop for life. Visit crohnsandcolitis.ca.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Show. It's a half hour of sketch comedy followed by the White Noise After Show, a mixture of debate and also some pretty kick-ass music. So stay around for that too. In the studio with me today, as always, is Connor and Sierra. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Yeah.
Quite well, as always. Yourself?
Yeah. Enjoying that the weather's not completely shite and now we can, like, stay outside past 6
today
o'clock.
Today was kind of miserable.
But we can stay out. At least it's light. Like, I finished editing the show today and I got out at, like, 7 and it wasn't
dark. It was very beautiful, actually, when we met up around, like, it was about, 7:15.
It's always magical when we hang out, Connor.
My new schedule has me awake for the sunrise and sunset, so that's good fun.
Lucky duck.
What's it like being a vampire? Is that fun?
Insomnia is really great. I also love working at coffee shops.
Well, I've been up now for like 30 hours because I had a Spanish
all right,
exam
just
today.
You're a slacker.
Dude, how do you study for
some
Spanish
of us actually
exams
work.
So like so well? I would just go like, oh whatever, like it's over. I'm not gonna remember any of this information.
I don't know. It works though. I passed the last one, so I don't know.
Well played. Like, I mean, of course, like, do what you need to get good grades. But it's like staying awake for half hour, 30 hours, just sounds silly.
Man, if you want it, if you want that,
if you want that Spanish bachelor's
degree, you got to do what you got to do. All right, time for some white noise.
Warning: the following programming may not be suitable for anyone. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by Coca-Cola, the delicious way to destroy your stomach lining. First up tonight, someone's eating breakfast.
What did you do that for?
You were chewing so loudly.
I was not.
Yes, you were. It's like eating with a demented goat.
It's a medical condition.
You spat food all over me.
Oh, so what? You dribble when you're asleep.
You're awake. There's no comparison.
Oh, fine, whatever. Just call an ambulance. I'm bleeding all over the furniture.
And in front of company. I am so sorry about all of this, Jane. Can I top up your lemonade?
I always chew with my mouth closed, mainly because Dad always made me eat with my muzzle on. Next up tonight is an advert!
From the people who brought you Voice Fry Unfry and the Llama to Dalai Lama Translator comes the latest great invention, the Trump Trivializer. It turns President Trump's disturbing speeches into mildly reassuring statements. Let's hear it in action with Trump on Racism.
I am the least anti-Semitic person that you've ever seen in your entire life.
Becomes,
I just learned what anti-Semitic means.
Let's try Trump on Sexuality.
I have so many fabulous friends who happen to be gay, but I'm a traditionalist.
Becomes,
I prefer to keep my homosexual feelings hidden.
How about Trump on Healthcare?
I have never seen a thin person drinking Diet Coke.
Turns into,
that's why I love Diet Coke.
And one more, Trump on the crisis in the Middle East.
The Middle East is a disaster.
Converts into,
I just learned that the Middle East isn't an actual country.
That last one might not seem quite as reassuring, but nothing about the Middle East ever is.
I try to turn off the news when Trump comes on, so I haven't been able to watch the news since 2015. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back. Oh, shit, Carl, we overslept.
Oh, no! It's 4 p.m. We've missed Pilates!
Oh, damn it. If we hurry, we can still get to the gym for Zumba. Loads of girls to spy on there.
No, it's Wednesday. It's self-defense class. Last time we spied on girls there, I spent a week in hospital.
Oh, yeah, and my left testicle still hasn't redescended. Maybe we could make some cheddar.
Oh, I'm not eating whatever's growing between your toes.
No, I mean money.
Oh, yeah, I'll eat that.
And you know where there is unattended cash?
My mum's sock drawer?
Nah, check there yesterday. I'm thinking gym locker rooms.
Gonna get in.
Just put on the gym gear and we'll pretend we've lost our passes.
I don't think people wear Speedos to work out, Neil.
German people do. Just do a German accent.
Okay, but why do you get to wear proper shorts?
Because we used your shorts to wipe up my puke, remember?
Oh, right, of course, of course.
Yeah.
Hi there. Welcome to Gold's Teeth Gym.
Zig Heil!
Pardon?
Sorry, my friend is an idiot. We forgot our passes. Can you let us in?
I'm sorry, but I don't recognize you.
That's because we haven't been in a while.
I can tell. Look at that spare tire.
That is an actual tire. I think it completes my look.
Right, well, I could give you a 7-day free trial.
Oh, no, we only need 15 minutes to nick stuff.
Shut up, you twat.
Just need your names.
I'm Mickey Mouse. He's Donald Duck. Now, let us in.
Fine, I hate working here anyway.
How are we gonna open them?
Shush, that roidy bloke is eyeing us up. Oh, shit, he's coming over here. Fuck.
Oi!
Yeah?
Where did you get those Speedos? They're great.
I got them at that store on Baker Street. The Satanist Army store.
You mean the Salvation Army?
Like them, but less homophobic. And less of a ripoff.
Well, you get a thumbs up from me.
Thanks. That was weird.
Really? I didn't hear anything he said. I was staring at his erection the whole time. Jesus Christ. Anyway, you keep a lookout. I'll use this crowbar to pry some lockers open.
Where are you hiding that?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Okay, coast is clear.
Jackpot! This guy's got 20 pence! Oh, and a stick of gum! Fuck yeah! Ah, oh, shit, damn. This guy's only got fucking bank statements, ID, and a social insurance number. I mean, what the hell am I meant to do with that? Oh, nice, Carl, I got some dinner for us. This one's full of dog food. Oh, another 20 pence. We're looking good, lad, looking good. Oh, ha-ha! This must be the Roidy Hard-On's locker. It's full of Speedos and something called human growth or bones. I don't know what that is.
Neil?
What?
You know how sometimes I get, you know, distracted?
Yeah, like that time I got stabbed by that gangster we were robbing because you didn't see him coming.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, you know, it might have happened again.
What did... Ah, shit, he's right behind you.
At least his erection went down. Oh, wait, no. He's coming back up.
What the flip do you think you're doing?
Checking for bombs.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry. Please, carry on.
Oh, yeah, no problems.
Maybe I can help?
Yeah, sure. You just rip open every locker with those scary arms and put any valuables in my bag.
Wait a minute. Oh, I see, to protect the valuables from the bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we can nick them.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Carl.
Not a face, not a face. Hit Carl's face, hit Carl's face. Not my face.
Gyms are dangerous places, especially if you train like me while staring at all the women. Next up tonight, people are arguing.
Please let me get it.
No, you don't need liposuction.
I do.
It's vain.
So is cutting your hair or wearing clothes that aren't Birkenstocks. But we all do it.
Just do some exercise.
I've tried, but it turns out I'm really lazy.
Then eat better.
I would, but I don't want to.
So the only option is surgery?
It's not an organ transplant. They just suck a little fat out. Or in my case, a lot.
Fine, you can have lipo, but only if you get a nose job, too.
I wouldn't have cosmetic surgery, though I'd love to have my appendix out. Next up tonight, we return to my childhood. Lunchtime! Mum's packed my favourite pork pies and a Heineken! Yes!
I'll swap you three chup-chup lollies for one of them pork pies.
Who the fuck are you?
I'm Dave, with the stash.
You ain't got a mustache, mate.
Nah, I got a sweet stash. I got them all. Haribo, drumsticks, Twizzlers, licorice, whatever you need.
Whatever I need? You got any porn?
I know.
Ah, forget it then!
Oh, come on. Maybe we can work together. You're a big lad for 11. I need someone like you for protection.
Well, I am 5 foot now.
Nah, I meant you were fat enough to maybe sit on people if they get a bit cheeky.
Piss off! I get enough fat jokes from my mum.
Oh, please do it. I'll pay you 12 chupper chaps a week.
All right, for that, I'll sit on whoever you want.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. I've got your pop rocks, your dipsticks, your chewing gum. Go on, Bill, buy some gum. Everyone knows you've got shit breath.
Piss off, Dave.
I'll have 2 bags of Haribo, Dave.
That'll be £4, love.
£4? You're taking the piss?
Is there a problem, madam?
This twat is charging £2 for Haribo.
Please, madam, step away from the merchandise until you come. Oh, my bollocks! She kicked me in the bollocks!
Oh, get up! She hasn't paid!
Piss off! It's not worth the pay!
Come on, man. I'll make it 20 chupper chups, and I'll buy you a cup.
All right, deal. But I want a decent cup, you know, like a big gulp one. Mom, I'm home. Oi, what's the food now?
Oh, piss off, you little urchin. It's not dinner time for another hour. Have a beer.
Fine, whatever. Oh, fuck, this shitty lager's in my teeth.
Have you been eating gravel again? I told you your uncle was taking the piss.
No, I haven't. Not at all this week.
All right, let me have a look. Oh, my God, Richard, your teeth are all rotten. What have you been eating?
No, only like 20 chubba chup lollies a week for the past 6 months.
Ah, well, they lasted longer than mine did. Guess it's time for false ones. Though I'm not buying new, you can have your granddad's.
Fine. Where are they?
Where do you think? Grab a shovel. She'll be able to dig them up before dinner.
Shh. I still have all my real teeth in a jar next to my bed. Next up tonight, people are deciding.
Oh, look at him. He's so small.
Who would have thought something so beautiful could come from my penis?
It came through my vagina. I distinctly remember that bit.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. and Mrs. Mahoney, but a circumcision should be done as soon as possible. I'll give you a minute to decide.
So what do you think? Should we do it?
Well, I was. You like my penis, don't you?
I've seen better, but I'm not really bothered. I guess it's settled.
No! Don't do it!
Whoa, what the hell is that?
Here, I'll swat it with the speculum.
Wait! I'm the spirit of your baby's future!
Pardon?
I am the voice your child does not yet have.
Like his 5-year-old voice?
Sounds more like 6 1/4 to me.
Honestly, I was thinking more like 13, but it doesn't matter.
What do you want?
Don't get the circumcision! Don't chop off my tinkle trim!
Why not? It's perfectly normal.
Do we remove any other part of our God-given bodies?
Well, your mom had that boil taken off her bum.
Think of the pain! There are more nerve endings in the foreskin than anywhere else on a man's body! Why do you think men are so sensitive about their penises?
Okay, but you're a baby. You won't feel it.
And what of the flower plucked virgin from the earth? You hear not its screams, but the pain endures. Particularly if you put it into a vase, that's basically torture. I'll learn that in, like, science class in about 8 years or something.
Okay, but everything Jeff ever taught me about the things the sex ed teacher taught him one afternoon in the PE cupboard says that it's better this way.
So it's cool if I grow up to be sexually repressed and take out my hormonal angst on you, the dog, your tulips?
No, not the tulips.
That seems like a threat, mister.
It's a prophecy, a scientifically verified prophecy. Anyway, I just thought you should know that I'm not cool with this. Not to mention my foreskin will probably end up in Mum's face cream next week.
What?
I've got to go now. Make the right decision for me.
Well, think about it.
Also, make sure to buy me cool clothes. I'm an Armani man. And on my 9th birthday, get me an Xbox so I won't be made fun of for being fat.
Like the 1S or the 2?
Whichever's more expensive. And don't let Sarah Baker bully me in 10th grade. Just because her mom drinks.
So, have you made your decision?
I think we'll opt out of the circumcision.
That's a shame. I find it weirdly satisfying to perform a circumcision. And that means my wife won't be able to buy face cream next week.
I get visited by spirits a lot, mainly vodka and rum. Next up tonight, someone is upset.
"15 years. That's how long I've been in this husk of a marriage. Starts out well, you know, weekends in Barcelona, weekdays in Croydon. I mean, what more could I ask for? When she gets bored and the swinging started. I mean, I thought it'd be fun, you know, but then it's her who's having all the fun with 5 of the blokes while I sit in the corner crying and masturbating using the tears as lubricant. Life is funny, you know. 1 minute you're 20. Full of bright ideas and at your sexual peak. Then suddenly you're 40, living in a caravan, trying to remember the last time someone saw you naked who wasn't a medical professional. But anyway, enough about me. Let's raise our glasses to the happy couple on their wedding day. To John and Gaynor.
To John and Gaynor.
I hate weddings, and I know weddings. My mother's had 6 of them. Next up tonight, women are talking.
Soph, you need to come to this new yoga class with me. It's called Healthful Hatha.
Meredith, that literally sounds like the worst thing ever. Why would I want to go to some ritualistic stretching ceremony?
It does great things for your body.
So does sex or a great night's sleep, but you don't see me trying to pawn that off on my friends like an Avon sales rep.
Hey, the instructor is world-renowned. I heard he even got Sean Spicer to bend over backwards in an advanced pose called Bullshit Sana.
I didn't know Steve Bannon taught yoga.
Hatha is really all the rage in Los Angeles. You don't want to be as toned and detoxed as a Hollywood actress after rehab?
What got this yoga craze going?
I think Dr. Oz once said Eastern stretching was a panacea for self-loathing and cellulite.
Makes sense, but that doesn't make me want to go anymore.
Come on! After the first class, you get a free coupon for a wheatgrass protein shake.
I think I'll stick to black coffee and apathy, thanks.
I really think you'd feel less negative after some physical activity.
Really depends on the activity. For example, playing baseball makes you want to blow my brains out.
Well, didn't you say that running helps you with your anxiety?
Right, but I don't want to pay to pump my own brain with spiritual wellness propaganda from a studio with less marketing sophistication than a pyramid scheme.
You could find a great community there!
Okay, if you want to define yourself by sharing the same logo on your overly tight spandex pants with other wealthy Zen blonde classmates, then be my guest.
If you were a real friend, you'd get that this is important to me and join in.
Yeah, I can't. I'm going to my Scientology meeting. It's purification week.
I hate yoga, but I love Yo Gabba Gabba. Next up tonight, people are getting turned on.
Ooh, he's nice.
Oh, which one?
The one with the big arms and the man bun.
Not my type.
Really? But he's so tall and hunky.
No, I like that one.
Really? The one with the glasses and elbow patches?
Yeah. Brains turn me on.
Oh.
Look at that prefrontal cortex. So curvy. And that nice, long cerebellum. What more could you want?
He's got pretty bad acne.
Who cares if the amygdala's that big?
Right. I don't get it.
You're just brainwashed by Western culture into fetishizing superficial parts of the body. Nothing compares to a perfect corpus callosum.
Sounds like a hardcore band.
Oh, shut up and hold my drink while I go and see if that guy will let me earfuck him.
I don't go for brains or beauty, just accessibility. That's not a disabled joke. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Nekelput, Caitlin Docking, Sierra Wiley, Nick Rinker, and Simon Welton.
Guest writing by Connor Nekelput and Sierra Wiley.
All right, there you go. That was the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed our half-hour sketch comedy. We will have another half-hour sketch comedy next week of brand new stuff. But stay tuned, because it's the White Noise After Show coming up, which is going to be our usual sort of debate slash cool music. Tonight, some of the topics we're thinking about, we're going to talk about, is pity a good thing? You know, should we pity? Should we not pity? Is pity bad? Is it productive? There's a lot to be said for that. We're also going to talk about if you could send any song into space, because Chuck Berry's song is part of the NASA mission where they're sending sort of, I guess, like blocks of data, which include songs and other...
And human nudes.
Other things in it to try and attract aliens. So we're like asking the question of like, what song would you put, if you could pick one song to be the first song aliens heard from Earth, like what would you possibly, how could you, you know, what would you possibly decide is that song that represents humanity? But anyway, we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to be talking about attraction, and sort of related to the topic to the show, whether sort of people can really choose partners on brains, or is there other things going on? But anyway, before we do that, we're going to play some music. So first up tonight, what's first up tonight, Connor?
First up tonight, we have Dog Collar by the fantastic band Trampoline.
All right, let's check it out. Thank you.
What do you do when life confines you? What do you do? What do you do when life confines you? What do you do? Do you blame it on your mother?
Yes.
Do you blame it on your father?
Yes.
Do you blame it on your mother?
No.
Do you blame it on your father?
All right, there we go. That was Sunshine the Blue Moon with Depression from Welcome to the Future. I like that track.
It's a good track. There's two good tracks we have there. Yeah. We've got a couple other good ones lined up for the rest of the set too, so I'm excited.
Stay tuned. All right, so our first topic of the night is we're going with one connected to the very last sketch that we did, which was about the two ladies chatting, and one of them was rather attracted to brains. She was all about the corpus callosum and the amygdalas of the gentleman.
Cerebellum.
And obviously that was a bit of a
farce?
A stretch on the idea. But the question there is, can and do people, because people talk about saying, I'm attracted to brains and I don't go for looks, I go for intelligence and wit and all these things. You know, we've all heard people say that. And so my question is does that actually happen? Is that how people actually do that? I'm not saying I don't. I'm talking in a very third person here.
Limited or omnipresent?
We'll see. So do people do that? And why? Why do they do that if they do? What do we think?
Well, first of all, my fetish is the cerebral cortex. Just going to put that out there to start off with.
Knew it.
Boring. Spinal cord's where it's at.
he likes the whole central nervous system.
Greedy.
It makes me tingle.
He wants the whole package. I think that brains are very important. I'm not quite of the Carl Pilkington perspective that it's a love of two brains and you should transplant brains. I think it is obviously licks are important in the short run. But I think as you're trying to develop a relationship that's based on having any real connection, there has to be brains involved. And I think you can't necessarily go on one contrasting side and say, like, oh, people are entirely just in it for looks or they're entirely just about the personality, because it has to go hand in hand and you can't just be on one extreme.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. What I would say, though, is that it's more of a stages thing, which is the reality is the first thing that you do see in somebody is their looks. And you know, you do make a judgment at least of like, oh, am I somewhat interested based on the looks? Like, you can't get around that.
Well,
and
your senses either gone whoo or they're meh.
Yeah, meh. And there I've seen plenty of data as well in psychology classes that back up that even if people suggest that they go for other traits above looks, that is still when in sort of unbiased testing where they can't sort of hide and just, you know, say whatever they want, where they use sort of techniques that sort of get around that, they've found that result that people are picking mates based on attractiveness. And that's not to say that that's all they're doing, but I think that we have to admit that that's the first sort of thing on the list. And then you get, because for me, I plenty of times you'll see somebody and they seem quite nice and pretty, and then you get to know them, and then your opinion of them can completely change in either way. They could be they could be annoying, they could be rude, they could be just ridiculously dull or stupid or any of those things.
Can you stop having a go at me?
Or it could turn out that they're far more attractive once you talk to them because they're very witty and they're very kind and funny or whatever it is, those kind, you know, those nice qualities that we like in friends and family and whoever else we have around us as close people.
Can you stop complimenting Sierra, please?
I've been looking at you as much. I don't.
Well, no, but you're right. You make a good point. The first thing, our first experience with another person predominantly is going to be how we see them. Before we hear what they sound like, before we understand what their thoughts are, it's going to be that is the first thing, our first experience with them. And that has to therefore be one of the first things we form a judgment on. So whether or not we value that more, I think might be even a bit of a red herring. Like, that is the first opinion we have, and we often like to stick to our first opinions, our first impressions.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny too, because you can take it to extremes in that you can be the sort of person who hangs out places where there's a very social dynamic, there's a lot of discussion, there's lots of sort of intellectual interaction, and therefore you sort of mitigate those effects a little bit. Or you can hang around in a nightclub, and it is officially a meat locker then.
Well, I would just like to say, like, I don't know if it's been similar for you guys, but there have been so many instances where I didn't initially have feelings for someone or didn't find them attractive to start off with. And then over time of getting to know them as a friend and understanding them more as a person, like you were talking about Simon with them becoming more attractive. But I would say, like, you could start off on a complete baseline level of not even thinking about that person in that way. And I think it's had to start off with that. But then once you've gotten to enjoy that person's company from an intellectual, emotional standpoint, then you start to appreciate their looks, and your brain can reframe the way that you perceive someone's physical appearance,
well,
I find.
There is a correlation, too, between familiarity and attractiveness.
Right.
And the longer you spend with people, you tend to find them more attractive.
What's the other thing? It's like if you ask 20 questions, a specific set of 20 questions to someone, and that you're supposed to fall in love with them, those, like, those deep questions that make you understand who they are. Yeah, exactly. The more you're around someone, the more you're going to have those kind of encounters that allow you to get to the grips with someone's kind of essence or how they are, and that makes you appreciate them more, I think.
So does that mean you don't believe in love at first sight?
I think love at first sight is a sort of red herring. I think you can have lust at first sight.
Mm.
I think that lust can then be sort of...
Reinforced,
I think. I don't think they're necessarily the same.
Yeah, I think the idea of love at first sight shows a misunderstanding of what love actually is, because you can't love someone just for the way that they look, for the reasons we've been discussing. I don't think there's any real body to that love if it's just about the initial appearance that you've received in your eyes. And I think that there can be a lot of romantic jargon, what we've learned from TVs and movies about how there's this idea of the soulmate and the person who just really kind of stops your heart the moment you see them. But I've never seen that in my life, and I find I'm quite the romantic person. So
absolutely. And I think we should consider, you know, God loves all of us, and he doesn't care what we look like. He loves us for who we are.
I knew you were a Christian waiting to come out.
He dresses like one.
He really does.
I don't know. But
what do you think about love at first sight?
Is that how we came together?
Oh my God! There's so much homoeroticism in this conversation between you guys. I can't.
I was talking to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a tiny little bit of me who would like to believe such a thing would be true. And there's definitely times where I've become rather infatuated with a person.
That's interesting. Infatuation versus lust versus love. Well, how does that fit in?
Because I think an infatuation can cross both. Because an infatuation can be a lustful infatuation, or it can be a deeper infatuation. And that I had a girl who I spent only 2 nights with ever. We just, like, she lived in a different town, and I hung out with her a couple of times when I happened to be in that town. But I never saw her again, but I was convinced, and I still am pretty convinced that, like, if the opportunity was there, that she would be like an almost perfect match for me.
Maybe she's only so perfect because you spent so little time with her.
Possibly, but it was one of those things where we literally spent like 6 hours, 2 nights, and talked and talked and talked. So I got to know her, you know.
Right, but there are different ways you can get to know someone, and there's a sort of there's a magic to having a really deep, wonderful conversation with someone. But there's also getting to know them through their ups and downs and understanding what they're like in different aspects of their life. And you can have the really privileged sort of narrow framework of, even if you've spent hours and hours and you can heard about their entire life, you're still like just in the frame of how they've discussed their life. And you're kind of like separated from the real world in that instance.
Yeah, but what stands out to me is the fact that I've never had a similar feeling with another person. It's not like, you know, I've had a similar infatuation with tons of girls and it's a recurring thing. Like, there was something that felt different to it, and you know, like a sort of higher level feeling. And yeah, like, if there is any sort of higher beings or anything out there, like, it would feel like that was one of those moments of soulmate or whatever it is. Maybe it's just a writer and someone who's creative and imaginative, or at least tries to be. I know, I actually think I'm not very imaginative. I always worry about that. But
I thought that KFC sketch was pretty imaginative.
Which one was
the
that?
The A&W one.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was like, we did do a KFC one a long time ago, which was the woman who won the KFC Employee of the Month award, but it sounded like an Oscar speech.
Yeah. No, I was thinking the A&W, Connor's right.
Yeah. Funny enough, though, that was based... No, the original A&W sketch was based on a piece of stand-up, which was the first piece of stand-up I ever wrote. But that the recent A&W one wasn't. That was a sort of newish thing. But anyway, let's play another song. Come back with a new question. I think we've beaten that to death. So next up tonight is a band called... Is it La Colère? You guys speak more French than I do.
I don't speak any French, but I can tell you that it's La Colère.
La Couleur? Okay.
La Couleur.
Which is weird, because then their song title, I think, is in Spanish. Nunca ser. That's Spanish to me. And the album's called Pop. So anyway, a bit of a mixture. Check it out. There we go. So we worked out it was actually Le Colour, and they kind of sing in French and Spanish. So
they're not kind of. One of them is singing French, and the other is speaking Spanish.
To be exact.
To be pedantic.
That's off their album POP, Pop being an acronym. It's actually
Thank you for spelling Pop for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, well, it's an
I would have had no idea if you hadn't spelled that.
Yeah, well, sorry, I wasn't actually talking to you guys. Really groovy album,
actually.
You
speaking to the dyslexic listeners? Who are you talking to, then?
To our four-year-old listeners who are like, I wonder how you spell this on a bone.
No, I'm pretty sure my... Like,
yeah, you're right. I'm an idiot. Anyway, so for anyone who's listening, I really recommend that album. We were listening to it earlier. It's quite groovy. Got a lot of different influences across it. I think it's like a 13-song album. Yeah.
If you like 80s music, it's got some wicked 80s.
Yeah, it's got some great 80s vibes and then some electro and some sort of almost alternative. It's good. Mm. So have a listen.
All right. So our next topic of tonight, is pity ever a good thing? I mean, some people assume it could be a lot of the times a good thing. I'm not suggesting it's not. Maybe that was the wrong way to phrase the question. But pity... Connor?
So, to me, pity is, in a sense, sort of empathy and finding yourself in the situation or in the person of another. And so I think it's a very human characteristic to feel pity. It's to sort of say, I have an understanding of what situation you're in, and it pains me because I can feel myself being there. But to act on pity... It's a challenge. I mean, Stefan Zweig, a writer who me and Sierra both like, and you've read some of his work as well, I'm a big fan of his work. He wrote an entire book that's based on pity and how it's dangerous. How, like, if you pity someone and then they really appreciate that and then it makes you feel good, you go back and you start pitying them again and again if it's a recurring condition, and suddenly you've entered a relationship based on pity that doesn't have anything more to it. You've just kind of sold yourself on this idea that you're being a good person or that they like you, and you lose the true essence of what you're doing.
I think you have to be careful, though, to confuse empathy and pity. Because I think that, like, empathy to me is something you do to someone you see as a peer, as an equal, whereas pity has this more connotation of someone you really sort of see at least beneath you,
yeah,
in some sense.
Yeah, it's more
sense.
Sympathy. It's like less being
but
able
it,
to
but
relate
it's
to
a more
them.
Condescending form of empathy.
Yeah,
in a sense, is in the such. Yes, not that they're necessarily innately inferior, but in the certain situation that they might find themselves. Yes, I agree.
Say that again.
So not that they're innately or inherently, what's the opposite of superior?
Inferior
to you, but certainly in the situation in which you pity them, they are.
Well,
as
I say,
yeah.
By doing so, you have basically set that
you're
is the
making
case.
Them inferior.
It's
yeah.
about
yeah.
creating an asymmetry in relationship, and it's about like people constantly being at different levels, and that's why you don't have equality.
Can you say that again?
No, we understand.
I didn't need to stutter. but I think entire societies are based on pity. I think without pity, you don't have social services, you don't have retirement homes.
I totally disagree, because I would say that it's empathy and that you believe that everyone has the right, because you see them as equals, that you feel that they also have the right to healthcare and to the opportunities of education and the social services that protect us at our weakest points in life, where, you know, because there's plenty of people who end up on old age benefits and who, you know, need a lot of healthcare resources, who used to be strong and the most powerful and the most, you know.
Yeah, but they used to be. Now they're not. Now they're inferior to you, which you think
but
was the point.
But I wouldn't say that they're inferior. I just think
you,
you see them as your equal, but that we go through cycles in life and at some point we need help.
But just because there's a possibility of you being in their shoes doesn't mean that there's not a superiority, inferiority, there's a differing power dynamic. Just because if I saw someone in a wheelchair and I could see there's a possibility that I could be in a wheelchair, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's no pity there.
But if you respect them and, you know, you see them as an equal to you, then I don't think it's pity that you should feel for that person. It should be it's empathy. It's a feeling of I support you as you would support me, and we're, you know, in it together. But that's not pity.
So pity comes down to the course of action you take.
Well, it's a feeling. It's the way you view them. It's the way that you perceive things.
It's an understanding. For me, the idea of pity is saying I recognize that we don't have the same opportunities, and if I see that they're not able to walk or to run or to move around and to not have the same independence that I could have in my life, I find that a shame. And it's like, it's not that I don't respect them as a person.
Yeah, I mean, but for me, like, I wouldn't look at it that way, in that I would see it as they have a very perhaps a blatant thing that is a difficulty in their life. Mm-hmm. That they have this physical incapacity or whatever it may be. But we've all got our own incapacities in different ways. Some of them mental, some of them physical, some of them maybe, you know, at different right. parts of life. And so I, you know, it's not pity that I'm feeling. It's just a sense of, like, that is who they are and what their situation is, and this is mine. And I think you can do that without ever touching pity.
But we have such difficulty in putting our issues out on our sleeves, right? Those are things we have the privilege of keeping hidden inside of us, you know, like traumatic things that happened to us in our past, like maybe perhaps like, you know, some psychological damage or whatever kind of troubles we're going through. I think the real shame is when people aren't able to escape that when they're in society and when they're constantly kind of chained to the physical manifestation of what their shortcoming is.
So I'll just interject here with the dictionary definition to put us out of our misery. Pity is a feeling of discomfort at the distress of one or more sentient beings. Basically that's it. A feeling of discomfort at the distress.
Right, and but that is so, to me, it's quite a self-serving thing, because it's not that you're, you know, it's as I say, it's just a discomfort. It's an irritation almost. It makes you feel bad, but it's, I don't know. It doesn't hold the same sort of value as empathy.
But it can also fuel some positive notions, like charity is based on pity, right? I don't love I don't think all charity is perfect, but it comes from a good place, right?
But,
and they're trying to get you to feel pity.
Too much of a generalization here. We can't talk about charity in that sort of broad terms, because there's too many examples of like things that are different motivations for why people do charity, and there's, you know, there is a lot of people that do it, I'm sure, out of the kindness of the heart and good natured, but it's a very complex issue, charity.
I feel like in pity, when you feel pity, you sort of know you can't really do anything to change the situation. You might say a couple kind words, you might donate
not
a bit of money.
Not necessarily, that's not a
well, yeah, that's why I said that's my opinion. Whereas if you do charity, you're kind of saying, like, I'm going to help these people. Like, that's your mission objective is to make sure that state is abolished, where they actually are no longer in a state of inferiority or distress. That's you saying that I'm going to help you get out of that. Whereas a pity, I think there's an impression that I can't do much.
That's what I'm saying. It's a separation and the expectation that separation will always be there. That's, I think, almost the difference.
Perhaps, yeah.
Whereas, empathy is like, again, it's we are, you know, brothers and sisters and partners in the world, whether, you know, by DNA or just by being human. And yeah, it's a different level.
But can you feel empathy, and can you feel like, you know, like you're totally at this equal level with someone if you have had such a drastically different experience than they have? If their socioeconomic background, their cultural background is so different from theirs, and their struggles are so different from your own, in some way, surely, you know, you're both human and you've both struggled. But on what level, you know, do you have empathy if your lives have been so different?
Because you just understand.
Do you?
The broader sense that everyone has their shit. And, you know, I give you examples of when the last job I had, I worked in a place where I came into contact with lots of guys who were on parole and had done some horrendous things. And, you know, some of these guys were on parole for life. And I didn't pity them. They, you know, a lot of them lived by their decisions, and they did their time, and they were now trying to, you know, live, you know, as well as they could in the situation they were in. And that, you know, it was really tough. Like, it's, from what I've heard, living in a halfway house sounds like the worst thing you could ever imagine. But I didn't pity them. I respected them for just owning up and you know, doing what they have to do and carrying on with life.
Do you find that pity would have limited you and seeing them? And
limited my relationship with them.
Yeah.
I think you think about people differently then, and you talk to them differently, and yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah. I mean, it's funny. I did get in one conversation where I was like trying to help someone, but not because I, you know, pitied them. I just felt like it was because this guy was spending a lot of money in our store. And I know he was like trying to get his own place. And like the guy was in like his 40s. He's trying to get his own place. And I felt like he was like wasting all his money at store. And he basically told me politely to fuck off, basically. Right. But it was fair enough, you know. I thought I'd try, and because I liked the guy, and I wanted to help him, but it wasn't out of pity; it was empathy. I'm just like, you know, a few little things here, and you could be in a world a better place. Because he had a good job, he was earning good money. He could have lived on his own, but he was living in his halfway house because he blew all his money on stupid stuff, which seems so fixable, you know. It seemed, but. You know, that was, he'd been in prison for like, you know, I think 20 years.
Jeez.
So when you're that institutionalized, it's not easy to cope with having control even in the real world. Like it's quite hard. You know, it's a bit like when you first become an adult and have those adult privileges of being buying your own food, doing all these things, but you're 45. You know, he went to prison when he was like 18. So it's, yeah, I couldn't, I mean, that's quite surreal. Anyway, do you have one last, say, last thing before we go to
the
song?
I think you're both right. I think Sierra's right in the fact that you can't know what the other person's feeling because you simply can't. Like, you have your experiences, they have yours. But Simon, you're right in saying that I think you do, so you see, yeah, the distress, like the humanity that's flailing, and you recognize that because you've been through something that was like that. And so you put your own experience into theirs, and you try to tie them together. They'll be perfect, but it'll get you
and,
there.
And the symptoms aren't always the same, of course. Some people have PTSD from incidents, and you know that's an aspect of it that most people hopefully don't have to go through. But we've all been in like distress. We've all felt a lot of pain at times, whether physical or emotional, whatever it is. We've all had our trials and tribulations. You can't exist as a human without it. It doesn't matter where you're from or who you are. You know, you will get sick, you will get hurt, you will suffer, and that's part of life.
Unless you're Connor.
As Kierkegaard would say. All right, let's go to a song, and we'll come back. We got a few fun things before we sign off tonight, but this is OPEP and Doctor Doctor.
I know what I want. 9 months till the deadline, and 9 weeks to make up your mind. Once you decide, there's no room for doubt. Every minute of your life to figure it out.
All right, there we go. That was Opet with Dr. Doctor from Stadium Cake. Okay, so our last little bit of the night, we do a couple of fairly quick questions. So the first off, if you could send any song into space to be the first song that aliens heard from the human race, which song would it be? What would be your pick?
Well, right now I'm feeling Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel.
Nice. Why that one?
It just always gives me a really lovely feeling when I listen to that song. And I feel like if we wanted to send a message to aliens, like, we're building a bridge across galaxies between your planet and mine, be kind of like a good, peaceful message to send. And also just like the chill vibes of the 1970s, I think, would kind of like smooth them over properly before we sent in our nukes.
Fair enough. Why are you nuking aliens?
Okay, a little bit of a joke. I wouldn't want to nuke aliens. Unless, you know, they first strike.
I would argue that if they're intelligent enough to like travel across galaxies, they must be peaceful. Otherwise, they'd have killed each other with that sort of technology.
Unless it's just the one who hasn't died yet is only going
to
be fine.
They're fleeing to Earth as an escape pod, and like, and
isn't
then
that the
like,
plot of Alien?
I haven't watched it.
So what's your one?
I'd go for a classical choice. I'd go for Ludovico Einaudi's Oltremare, which is a 9-minute beautiful classical track that really has an amazing emotional range that captures, I think, the highs and lows of the human experience, as well as centuries of piano and string work that we don't hear a lot these days anymore, but really still just like leave an impression on you when you listen to it for the first time.
Interesting. I can tell you're privately educated.
No, I just have good taste.
But strangely doesn't play piano.
No, I wish I could, but someone wouldn't teach me.
Shots fired!
Simon.
I'm pretty good at, what was that with it? Blowing in the Wind? Ooh.
Twinkle, Twinkle?
Blowing in the Wind, I'm doing well at. Okay, so
Fire and Flames.
Mine? I don't know. Part of me obviously wants to just do a Smith song. Actually, fuck it. I'm going to say a Smith song because I'll tell you why.
Do you want to say the song first?
I think the song would have to be...
That's what it's called. It's just called the Smith song.
See, I'm torn, but I guess just there is a light that never goes out, probably, because it's got good guitar, it's got good vocals, it's good tune, and I think it would just show that there's sort of a bit of depth to humans' emotions, and I think that, you know, could be something that makes us distinctive. According to Star Trek, that would appear apparently be something that may be distinctive about us to other races. So I think that would be something interesting to highlight to them, is that we, have this range of emotion. And also, I think there's probably, you know, there's no one else on our planet that sounds like Morrissey. So there probably isn't anyone else in the universe that sounds like him. So they'll be like, whoa, that guy is unique. I mean, he doesn't give a shit where the tune's going. He's just going on his own direction.
I love the statistic impossibility of that. No one on our planet. So out of the billions of planets.
Trillions of planets.
Yeah. Of habitable planets and all of the multiverses. It's probably statistically unlikely.
But okay. No,
I love the idea of saying, you know, what's the best work humanity has done? And of our kind of recent memory of the music we have available, it's kind of fantastic how much music we have at our fingertips now with technology to view through. But I love that, you know, we can have the best of humanity shown through a couple minutes of rhythm.
It's funny, though. I would say... This is maybe a question for another day. All right, let's go there now. Do you think that there's certain art forms that are more important or more valuable or more like worthy and more useful and more effective than others?
No.
Yes.
Just every piece of art is different. It depends on how it makes you feel.
Okay, I completely disagree. Sierra, you go first, though.
I think... It depends on the purpose of the art form. If it's to survive beyond its time and it's not just for a performative value and it's more about getting a unique message out there, some type of social commentary, something that remarks a truism about the human experience and something that goes to create some sense of universality and of empathy with your fellow man, then I think that's where true art comes through.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that some art forms don't lend themselves to depth.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the problem. That's what I say. Like, you know, in a 2-3 minute song, you cannot say and you cannot convey what you can in a 1,000-page epic book.
Exactly.
You're right, but I've also enjoyed 3-minute songs more than an 800-page book.
You haven't read the good ones.
Well, but I'm not going to experience every piece of art that's ever been created.
I know, yeah. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but clearly a book has the depth that, it has that ability to build characters, build mind frames, build entire worlds if necessary to get a point across.
But I would there is something to be said for the accessibility, right? And about the sort of the time you're inputting into enjoying a piece of art versus what you get out of it. So if Connor's saying he's gotten more out of a 3-minute song than an 800-page book, like, yeah, definitely. And there's obviously a range of the types of 800-page books that there are, right? But I think that there's something enjoyable and that you can have so many different ways to express an idea. Sometimes the 3-minute song is best. Sometimes the interpretive dance is best. And that, and sometimes it's the long form novel. But I love that there's that choice.
Also, it literally exactly depends on how we've been raised. If we've been raised on certain art forms, then either those might strike us.
No.
No, it does.
No, because there is objectively far more depth available in a book. And I use the example 800 pages. I don't even think it needs to be that many. I mean, Narcissus and Goldman's a great example. That's arguably nearly a novella. It's only like 250-300 pages.
Like 350-400.
Is it really that long?
That's a book, dude. That's a book.
Okay. All right. So it's fair. It's a decent size, but it's not one of the epics of Tolkien or anybody else.
Economy of words, right, Mr. Writer?
Quite. So that's a great example,
and every word of that book is just pure art. It's just
it's brilliant,
beautiful.
It's brilliant, and it depending on your age and your mindset, it could very well change a lot of what you think of the world and how you perceive things. And there's no way a song could do that. If a song does that, it doesn't work. It doesn't happen. It doesn't make any sense.
Like, you're literally comparing apple to orange. Art is simply expressing the truth and the amazing variety of the human experience.
It's not necessarily the
truth.
Also,
one's truth, a perspective, then.
Mm. Isn't a lot of your art projecting falsitudes or
fiction? Okay, so
forget
truth. Perspective. It's showing you different ways to connect ideas, different ways to imagine ideas,
but you still have to admit that there's no way you can have the depth of a perspective or an experience from a 3-minute song. It's impossible that a book isn't far, couldn't possibly be far more deeper.
But the moment you get a book that's shorter than another book that's actually better for it, that defeats your entire argument.
Because there's a limitation to it in that, yes, you can say a lot in 300 pages and perhaps more important things than has been said in a lot of books that are a lot longer, but you can't then say, but we can turn it into 5 verses and 3 of them are repeated.
The one who's made this 5 verses. No one said that. I'm merely arguing that every art has its place somewhere. And you know what? I'm not going to get and love most art. I know that. We're all going to have things we pass over. We don't see the value. Because we all have different experiences.
But we're not saying
what art
the question
is.
Wasn't
sharing experiences.
Hang on. But the question wasn't, is all art valuable? The question was, are some art forms more valuable than others? That was the question. So you've answered the wrong question.
Okay, but so you say 5 verses, okay?
Okay.
Why have you said 5 verses?
Because that's an average song.
Okay, but why are you looking at an average song? You said there's an epic
1,000-page
book.
Even,
right?
Even it's epic songs, versus American Pie
we're playing on numbers. So what you're saying is, objectively, because there's more numbers to this, and because there's more words in it, and words express ideas, therefore that has to have better content and more legacy, because it has more ideas per sequence.
What we're saying is that you, in a book, you have a lot more time, because there is a lot, unless you're writing what is basically a musical, which is not then a song.
Yeah.
It's a collection of songs into it. And even then, musicals can have depth.
I don't really like musicals.
But musicals do not have anything on books because they don't have the omnipotence of the... It's the reason films never have the depth of a book, because they can't get inside the head of the character.
And that's why I find the idea of writing a novel so imperative to, like, my idea of writing, and that's why I want to do it so badly, because to me it's the fullest perspective on the things that I want to discuss. It's how you kind of get into the brain of each character. How do you remark upon the setting? How do you go into different emotions and different events and kind of have this holistic interpretation of what the character is and what their life is? And I think Peep Show is a really interesting way of looking at perspective that treads the line.
It's a TV show. We're not talking about pornography. Just to clarify.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you were telling me, and I'm like, I know. just because it is also, it's dialogue, but then it goes into the character's mind, so it's almost like this book that has this omnipotence. So I thought that was very cool, and it's a unique sort of art form.
Yeah, it's brilliantly.
The best form of art is something that art makes you think, right? Ask you questions, right?
Of course.
So what's to say that you can't be made to ask questions in a 5-lyric song versus just being told a particular story in a 300-word book?
Because you
300 words in your book?
Because,
sorry, 300 pages is what I meant.
Because
sorry.
You can ask one question. You could ask what you can ask in a page of a book, which is you could ask a fair bit. You can say, a decent amount, arguably in a page. Like you can get a few ideas out, but you can't really flesh those ideas out. Offer counterexamples. Offer characters of different perspectives, which allow you to then sort of synthesize and understand what it is that the writer is trying to say. All you can do is try and, because it becomes poetry where you try and interpret it and you try and get something out of it, but really it becomes more of a reflection of your own taste and ideas than it is a reflection of the author sometimes, because if you're, you know, if it's too obtuse and you know there isn't actually a clear message there. And
some books like that. I've read books like, I don't know what the point this is.
Well, that's because you're not very bright, but I'm joking.
Maybe, right? Everyone's story, everyone's different. Everyone
I'm not saying it's not possible. What we're trying to say, though, is that you have to admit the limitations of the art form versus other art forms. We're not...
Limitations, yeah, sure. I absolutely agree in limitations, but you've then said a certain limitation that you've imposed determines what is more valuable. I understand what you're saying, that, you know, more ideas... Because you can write a book that has every word being idea, has more ideas than the 3-minute song. I get what you're saying, but I don't think that necessarily just means that that's inherently more valuable. It's all about how you're doing it.
Well, but if art is...
Art isn't about numbers.
What do you mean?
Art isn't about numbers. You're saying that the bigger the book is, the more ideas you can have, like, there's more depth,
but
there's more chance for you to do this and that
the
other.
Whole, you're missing the point of our argument again. Sierra, please.
I think it's about the sophistication of the ideas that you can put forth in length. It's not necessarily about numbers. It's so, for example, the book I'm reading right now, Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. It's about 1,000 pages long, really tiny text. The idea of it is that Dostoevsky, throughout his whole life, wanted to write his views on everything, about religion, about family, about individualism, everything. And he's like, how
suffering.
Can I put this into one narrative?
Gambling.
Yeah, well, it's Russia. Of course it's gambling and suffering. Poverty and prostitution. Yeah. Those are all givens. But he couldn't write this in a song. There are actually songs spattered throughout the text for some reason. But it's about kind of how do you give this sort of holistic idea of human experience. And I think in some ways the novel is the best way to do that.
Absolutely. All right, we are out of time, guys. Connor is never going to agree with either of us. And that's fine.
It's not, because you keep trying to make me agree with you instead of just saying, oh, you got a point there, mate. You're trying to tell me I'm wrong, which is fine because I'm up for the challenge of the debate. Anyway.
Well, it's because you are wrong. thank you so much, both
welcome
of you, for
to
being
my life.
Here. It's been great.
Ciao.
Yeah, it was a good chat.
Thanks, guys.
We'll be back next week, as we said, with more sketch comedy and more chit-chat, debate, whatever you want to call it, and some cool music. Our last cool music of the night, though, is going to be Kristen Hirsch. This is Green Screen from Wyatt at the Coyote Palace. Enjoy. We'll see you next week.